Hello, I'm Will Shires and this is Talking Trucks. Sorry for the notable gap since our last episode. We're very short-staffed on commercial motor at the moment and it's all been a bit manic for the last few months. Anyway, we're back now and in this episode I'm joined by Sean Pargeter. He's the MD of Surrey-based HGV training provider EP Training and he's got lots to say about the dumbing down of the HGV test and reckons it could be driving down standards. Hello, Sean, and thank you for joining me.
Hello, Will. Thank you very much for the invitation.
No worries at all. Now, before we get started, tell us a little bit about EP Training. How did it all start, and what services do you offer?
Okay, so EP Training Services actually incorporated, started back in 1981. For those of you that remember, Margaret Thatcher was the Prime Minister of the day. So EP, that stands for Eddie Pargeter, who was my father, who started the business back in 1981. Started with one lorry and a porter cabin running out of a car park in Esher. I say that was back in 1981, so a lot of water has passed under the bridge since then. We were originally based in Esher, so predominantly covering the Surrey area, but mid-90s we moved to a purpose-built training facility based over in Bookham near Leatherhead. So we've been there maybe coming on 20 odd years now. Very established, reputable training company. People know us predominantly for HGV, but there are many other strings to our bow. So my father and we have over the years incorporated, developed, included extra associated courses that go along with driving a truck professionally. So for example, our suite, our forte of courses now includes such things as, well, anything to do with commercial driver training. So you're talking your 7.5 ton, your class 2, your class 1, your minibus, bus driver training. We moved a lot into the classroom as well now, where ADR, we're now the one of the largest providers of ADR training in the country. Obviously, we've been an approved driver CPC training organisation since 2008. We do the obligatory forklift, the HIAB, transport manager training consultancy. Basically, our idea was to be a one-stop shop for anybody who's looking to start or enhance their career within this industry.
Okay, now you've invested a lot of money recently in your fleet, and anyone listening to this can see the trucks in the commercial motor now. Tell us a little about the one we're in now, because this isn't what I expect a training truck to look like.
No, that's reassuring and nice to hear, actually. So the vehicle we're sitting in today, that's Mercedes Actros. As far as what year it is, it's within the last 5 years. We try and buy things nice, new and modern. We have recently invested greatly in new livery as well as new vehicles. Because for us, as far as we're concerned, our customers or the people we're trying to attract are the people that will predominantly see our vehicles driving up and down the highways and byways of Surrey. And if we have clean, modern, well-maintained, well-presented vehicles, it says a lot about the company. So we take a lot of pride in making sure our vehicles are the kind of thing people want to learn to drive in.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, now, in recent years, the UK training industry has encountered some major challenges and continues to do so today. And I'd like to discuss some of these with you. So first of all, let's rewind the clock 4 years and find out how COVID affected the business.
Yeah, it has been some seismic changes over the last 4 years. And obviously, we're going to go back and look at March 2020 when COVID struck and the government decided to put everyone down everyone in lockdown. Now, our business, although we do other things, probably 85% of our business is driver training. And that all obviously culminates in a driving test. So for us, the DVSA, the Driving Vehicle Standards Agency, that is our number one supplier. So that's obviously a government agency, and COVID was a really bad, not just for the training companies but for the DVSA as well. I think to begin with, and I admit I do get it, that nobody really knew what was going to happen, what was going to pan out, but the lack of communication from the DVSA. And for a business, we need certainty, whether we're going to open or whether we're not. And the communication was absolutely woeful.
Was it?
From the DVSA. You know, not only contacting them, but obviously getting messages out to us. So, as far as we were concerned, everything's shut down, there's no business, there's nothing going on, and we'll let you know if anything changes. That was very hard for a business like us to plan ahead and try and work out what we're doing.
But CPC went online, didn't it? So that was one thing you could carry on with?
I'm not here to bash the DVSA, okay? I understand that they have a poison chalice, whatever way you look at it. Yeah, my argument was really with the government. During COVID, the DVSA, they did pull one blinder out of the hat. So we were told, you can't do any more driver testing. So then we looked at, okay, can we do anything in the classroom? Well, everything was locked down as well, so people couldn't come to our classroom and train. So there was nothing available for people to do. The DVSA started then to allow companies that sought approval to then deliver the driver CPC training online. Now, not every driver CPC training company took advantage of that. I would say those that had their ducks in the row and took the advantage of being allowed to deliver driver CPC, that was a lifesaver. That was a lifesaver. Because although things like furlough was being paid, companies still had bills to pay, they still had national insurance, pension, etc., etc. So I'll give them their dues. That, for us, I don't think we'd still be here if the DVSA hadn't allowed us to do the online driver CPC. Because we were closed in terms of driver testing for a year.
Really, a whole year?
A year. Without anybody telling us, right, we're going to open up in a year's time. They were just told, we're going to have a look at it again in 8 weeks' time. So there was no certainty. And obviously we had a lot of customers that were very anxious to get their driver training started or even completed. And we were booking courses based on, hopefully, in 8 weeks' time, things would open up.
Yeah.
Only to find out it'd been pushed out for another 3 months.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a torturous time, not just for us, for anybody else in the industry. Lack of communication, lack of information.
So then we came out of COVID with a double whammy of a driver shortage and a waiting list of 50,000 people wanting to take their HGV tests.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in 2021, along came Grant Shapps with, he might have thought of it being a silver bullet, but I'm not sure you would agree. First of all, he said everyone can go straight to class one. Was that a good thing or a bad thing?
No, and my adage in life now, in fact on my gravestone, is going to say the words, just because you can, doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
So you just point out, right, that during COVID, there was probably approximately 50,000 drivers that were waiting to do their test. A lot of people as well, if you remember, took the opportunity to retire, and that includes in the driving industry as well.
Of course.
So when we came out of COVID, real pent up demand to do that. If you remember, we came out of COVID, there were still people who got COVID and then were having to isolate as well, included examiners, included students. So even though they were doing tests, it certainly wasn't perfect. So yeah, let's go back to Grant Shapps. Can I just add in the reason why this was all done in terms of changing all the legislation? Primarily, when we started coming out of lockdown and we were allowed to start traveling again, a lot of people hadn't been on holiday for several years. And international flights and so on, it was a real problem. So a lot of people decided to do a staycation. Only to realise that if you pass your car test after 1997, you have to do a driving test or a car and trailer test in order to tow a trailer.
Oh, a caravan.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't know that. So what then happened was everybody booked up tests to do a car and trailer test. In fact, all the HGV tests were then set aside to do the car and trailer test. So we had all these people that wanted to do their tests for the lorry. We had this shortage of drivers as well. There wasn't very many tests, and all the tests were going out were mainly going to the car and trailer. So Grant Shapps thought, well, how can we tackle the driver shortage, get tests done, I know what we'll do. We'll completely scrap the need to do a car and trailer driving test. So that was initially to let some tests free up as well. Grand Chaps also, yeah, going from car to class one. So that was going back to pre-1997. And the reason he did that was, I think, to obviously alleviate the driver shortage, make it so less costly, I guess, the fact you haven't got to do the class two to the class one. I would say after COVID, right, if you pass from car to class one, you're going to get a job. Yeah. Because the demand was so strong, employers were taking anybody on. They weren't going to leave, bite their nose off, spite their face, and leave a load in the yard.
Yeah,
they'll give it to someone who's barely qualified.
Yeah,
and they were paying good remuneration as well. So everybody jumped on the bandwagon.
That's it. At the time, the newspapers were full of headlines, weren't they? Of people being able to earn, you know, 50, 60, 70,000 pounds.
But they're all about headlines. So where you say 50, 60, 70,000 pounds, that was certainly not the norm. That was the exception. Some people were being paid that. The money was better. That's how it was, because obviously when the demand for drivers went up, you know, transport companies were paying ridiculous money just to retain their drivers. So initially, yeah, to service the shortfall, absolutely fine, no problem. But then that shortfall was gonna die down at some point. And let's face it, this country economically, growth, so on and so forth, we're not doing very well at all. So the situation now, if we can go to now, companies can't pay the kind of wages, the remuneration they were offering post-COVID. As far as the driver shortage goes as well, depending on what newspaper you read or what podcast you listen to, there's anything from no driver shortage to 80,000 drivers, depending on who you're speaking to.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced there is any kind of driver shortage out there at the moment.
Because presumably you were getting calls from employers asking for new candidates, weren't you?
Yeah, unprecedented, Will. Never before in my time doing it for 25 years did I have companies ringing me going, if you get any new qualified drivers, any chance you can send them my way?
Wow.
I say that with exception. There are a few really good companies out like ELB and other companies that will give newly qualified the opportunity. But you know as much as I do, most guys, when they get qualified, the biggest hurdle they've got is getting that new start, getting that experience.
Yeah.
Employers were not interested in that. We were getting people, right, that were passing their tests on a Friday, class one, had guaranteed work, earning good money, starting on a Monday. It's not like that anymore.
No.
It's not like that anymore. I mean, you've seen firsthand how many transport companies are going to the wire.
Yeah, we're losing readers all the time.
And as a subsequence of that, if those transport companies go under, those drivers haven't got any work. So the market now is, it's an employer's market, in as much as they can take on drivers who have got the 2 years' experience. It's back to how it was pre-COVID, Will, in as much as it's very challenging. And the other issue, which is really, really important, right, you go straight to class one these days and you haven't done your class two, you're not going to get work driving to class one. Not in this day and age. Not in the present situation. Employers, okay, they're not going to give you, after you pass the very basic driving test, let's be honest, the keys to a £160,000 bit of kit,
no,
plus the load that you're taking with that as well. The best you can hope for, the best you can very hope for, is to get some experience on a rigid.
Yeah.
So going for class one, no, terrible idea. Look, over two-thirds of the lorries on the road, they're not Arctics, they're rigids. It's always been, when you go looking for work, you get your rigid work experience first. Then you move your way up.
So what do you say then, when someone calls up and say, I want to get my HGV licence, I believe I can go straight to class one. What do you say?
I'd say just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
Look, if you went to...
Well, would you then lose them though? Is there a risk they'll go off to someone else?
No, because at the end of the day, the customer makes the choice. And it's always about making the choice. All we do, okay, is we give them impartial information. We don't sugarcoat it. We'll tell them how it is. If they want to go straight to class one, because they all think if I get a class one, then obviously I've got a class two and everything's good in the hood. It's really difficult passing your class one, even from rigid to class one. But we're talking people, you know, no disrespect to Uber drivers or anybody else for that matter, right? But when they saw a headline, 70 grand a year, 50,000 driver shortage, the world and his wife said, well, I'm going to have a go at that. And I'm sorry, the overall standard of driving on the UK highway is it's abysmal. So what do you want to do? Do you want to spend more money trying to get a license that you might never, ever get, and you're probably not even going to drive? Why not go for something that is less challenging to get, cost you less money to get, more chance you're going to get work with it?
Yeah.
You know, strong advice, right? I mean, come on, Grant Champs is government, right? I can't see them having brought anything useful to this party, to this industry, apart from the online driver CPC, since I've been working in the industry. It was a shocking idea to do that. And I refer back to when I was talking about the car and trailer testing. The fact that if you, before they did all the changes, if you wanted to get a car and trailer license, you had to do the same driving test as if you were doing an articulated vehicle. 1.5 hours on driving ability.
Really?
Absolute waste of time.
When they knew how to drive anyway.
They knew how to drive already. My view should have been they kept the car and trailer. They reduced the test down to 30 minutes, whereby they're more assessing them on coupling, manoeuvring, recoupling, driving a slightly longer vehicle. It's not about their driving ability, Will. Then you could have kept the category C. You could have done away with this stupid idea about getting training companies to do their own reversing areas. You know, it's just added more burden, more cost, when really the DVSA could have just kept it as it was.
So what's happened to first-time pass rates? Are they lower now at Class 1?
Car to Class 1. National average is probably just under 40%.
I mean, presumably it was higher before because you already had your Class 2.
Yeah, it was early, mid-50s national. If you're going from car to Class 1, you've got just over a 50% chance of doing it. Car to Class 1. But look, ignore statistics. It's all about the individual. When we do our training, we get two people in training, okay? Two trainees, and they'll share them. I can guarantee you, everybody that turns up for these courses, no two drivers are at the same standard.
Yeah.
It's about the individual. You know, you can lead a horse to water. If you're not the kind of individual that will drink it, you're never going to be drinking it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. With all due respect, we're sitting there now and watching a couple of guys practicing their reversing.
Yes.
Now, they're going to be doing that reverse test with us, and the law says you've got to pass that reverse test before you do the driving test.
Right, yeah. So tell us more about this then, because this is something else that was introduced at the same time, wasn't it?
So, to alleviate... to make driving tests more available, the government said, right, we'll do away with the car and trailer testing, we'll do away with the need to go straight from car to class one, and I'll tell you what we're going to do as well, this is the DVSA, we're going to increase the number of driving tests, on-road driving tests, that the examiners do at the test centre from 4 to 5 a day. That will tackle the driver shortage. But as a result, you, i.e. me, training companies, you got to now do that own reverse scenario bit yourself. You got to do the test. You got to do the reverse bit yourself. So what that means now is that me as a company, I have to invest and pay a lot of money, especially in Surrey, for an area where I can conduct Arctic reverse tests, which is approximately 70 by 20 metres. And just to give you an idea where we are in Surrey, I don't get much change out of £60,000 a year for hiring an area out like that.
Wow.
Whereas, this is the changes by DVSA. So if you and I now drove down to our local driving test centre, all you'll see is tumbleweeds. There's nothing going on.
Really?
Yeah. Because the demand is no longer there.
Yeah.
And the other bit in this, right, we were told, you get your own reversing area and we'll get the examiners doing 5 tests a day. That hasn't happened, Will. So where we are today, they are still doing 4 driving tests a day. But what they're not doing is a reverse test, because we got to do that. And yet they still get the same amount of money for the tests as what they did before.
Of course.
£115 before, £115 now.
Now, I know you guys play by the book. Do you think all training providers do when it comes to this reversing test?
I mean, obviously, I think the DVSA would not put out some sort of name and shame list about those that they found to be. So it's not public knowledge about what's going on out there. Anecdotally, knowing this industry, I wouldn't say it's rife, but I'm saying you've always got your bad apples out there. Whether their area that they're using, because Will, this area we're looking at now, right? I didn't have to get a DVSA person down to inspect this. I just sent a couple of photos off and said, is that okay? They went, yeah, fine. I could have taken a photo of any place at all, really, as long as it had the areas. So, yeah, there's that going on. There's also, if you're doing the test yourselves, there may be a design inkling to maybe put people through who shouldn't necessarily have been given the pass, i.e. they didn't pass as they should have done.
Yeah.
So I know of companies whereby trainees have come to us, they've done their reverse at this other company, and they failed the driving part, the driving test on road. They've come to us to do the on road. We've taken them out for a couple of days. We've then driven into the test centre and asked the chap to reverse it back into the bay to then start his on-road driving test.
Yeah.
So the guy then reversed it back. He couldn't reverse, Will. So we're saying, what's going on here? You've got a certificate there that says that you are competent, you passed the test.
Yeah.
The guy just wrote the certificate.
Well, that's frightening.
Now, that was reported to DVSA. They investigated that. That company is still an approved off-road testing area like us.
Yeah.
Because DVSA's mantra is they won't take your approval away. They would rather try and work with you to make sure that you do adhere to it, which I get, right? But that is just blatant taking a piss, and it's not a level playing field either. It's not. So no, we do it right. I mean, I was saying to you earlier, I've got these two guys here who pretty much most of the week we have been doing practicing the reversing, the coupling, uncoupling. People don't realise how difficult this is. People ring up, right, and they go, yeah, I'm going to want to buy that course, I want to do class one. We say, you know how difficult it is. Yeah, don't worry. I've seen it on television. I've seen one before. In fact, some even say, I've got a simulator, I've been practicing at home. It's not until day one that they get behind the wheel of that truck and then they realise what it's all about.
Have they got a simulator? That's incredible.
At that point, they then want to decide to do the rigid. You're too late. You bought that one.
Yeah.
You can't change it now, which is why at the first instance we try and advise them. There are many training companies out there. You ring them up, they want to get as much money out of you as possible, and I get that. I understand that. But they would try and flog them car to class one, all the extra bits, get as much money out of them as possible. We're of the opinion you can invest less. If you listen to our advice, you'll get a better return. And not only that, Will, they will then come back at a later date, not only buy more services of us, but recommend us as well.
Now, it's a long time since I passed my test. In fact, I'm back in the days when
did
you were
have
straight
a
class.
Test back then? No, you used to be able to go to the post office, didn't you?
I'm not quite that old.
What decade was that?
It was I passed when I was 21. In fact, on my 21st birthday, I'd have been
1983.
Bloody hell. 80s. Anyway,
yes.
Remind me, because it has been a long time. Mm. What is the current process? Because there's hazard perception, isn't there? How does hazard perception work?
Yeah. Okay. So let's say you're a new entrant, right? You want to get your lorry licence. And when you get that lorry licence, you want to be driving commercially. You want to be paid to drive a lorry. Just having the HGV entitlement on your licence will not suffice. Right? The idea is, you come to someone like us, and at the end of the process, you will have a HGV licence and a thing called a driver's CPC card. as you know, you will not get gainful employment unless you have HGV and driver's CPC. So there's a process for getting both things. And if we say you're a new entrant, they've got your car license after 1997, there are four modules you need to complete, right? Whether you're doing class two or class one with driver's CPC. So the first thing is you've got to have a car license. You've got to have a full car license, okay? Ideally as clean as possible. But in the first instance, you apply to DVLA for the provisional. You're not giving it automatically. You have to apply for it. When you apply for it, you must also do a basic medical, which checks your eyesight and your blood pressure. Very straightforward medical. When the provisional comes back, you then do a thing called module one, which is a multi-choice theory test. You've got to do 100 questions, get at least 85 right.
Is that difficult?
No. Everything's easy. The only thing that's interesting or worth any value in this is the driving. A novice, if I gave them 100 questions to do now, just based on LGV multi-choice, okay, just 100 questions randomly, never studied it before, I guarantee they'll get at least 80 of those questions right.
Can you give us an example of one?
When would you use your fog lights?
I see, when it's foggy.
No, when visibility is less than 100 metres.
You can't use it if it's raining, though, can you?
Yes, you can. In fact, they are going to change the word fog lights to high visibility lights.
Are they? Oh, right.
It's adverse weather
conditions.
Well, I've
conditions got one wrong already,
will.
Then, so it's not that
anything
bloody
anything less than 100 metres. It could be blizzard, snow, heavy rain. It could even be foggy. So that's one of them.
Okay.
All right, so what's the legal minimum tread depth for a goods vehicle tyre?
1 mil.
You're not bad. You're not bad. It's at least 1 millimetre across 3/4 of the width all the way around.
Got you.
They're a little bit techie questions, but I would say, right, if you did a multi-choice, most of it's common sense. You know it from having done your car licence, okay? So, in fact, it's harder to go from nothing to get your car multi-choice than from your car multi-choice to your lorry.
I see.
It's easy. You could just turn up and wing it. And then you do the hazard perception theory test.
And is that tailored specifically to trucks?
No. It's a box ticking. This whole thing is box ticking. When you do your medical, when you do your provisional, make sure you tick the right box for your provisional. When you do your multi-choice, make sure you tick A or B or C or D. When you do the hazard perception is the same hazard perception that is done for those seeking their car license, right? So pretty much anyone that's doing their hazard perception for their lorry would have done one for a car. So when you do one for the lorry, it's still a car level, okay? And this is the really stupid bit in all of this, I'm sorry. The hazard perception that you do is designed for novice drivers, okay? So what's the difference between an experienced driver and a novice driver is when you're looking at these video clips trying to pick up the hazard, experienced drivers will look further down the video clip, i.e. they will pick up that hazard quicker than the system wants them to. So wow. We tell people, when you're doing the hazard perception and you see a hazard develop, don't click as though they tell you to. Wait a couple of seconds and then you click. So hazard perception, you have to cheat that one in order to pass.
That's incredible.
If it was proper, right, it would be done at lorry level, because first off, the view is completely different. It is. Compared to car. And not only that, it would be reflected more for experienced drivers. So that's box ticking. Don't get me going on the driver CPC case study for new entrants, which is what we call module two. So we've done the medical, right? We've done the provisional. We got that back.
Yeah.
You've done that multi-choice.
Yeah.
You've done the hazard perception, the one you need to cheat.
Yeah.
You then do a CPC theory test. So that's like seven stories, seven situations, scenarios they're going to give you about lorry drivers, okay? So they're going to tell you about lorry drivers and what they do in their working life. For each of these seven stories, they're going to give you 6 to 8 questions with multi-choice answers. Now, you can walk it off the street without any prior studying, read the case studies, because the case studies, the scenarios, will have the answers in them.
I see.
You then read the questions, and the answer is there, it's multi-choice. So again, you have to question the integrity of a qualification that you don't really need to study for. You turn up on the day, read the stuff, choose the answer. Once you've got through those non-challenging elements, you then go on to module 3, which is the driving. So that, in my opinion, is the only part in this process that has a bit of meaning, has a bit of value, has a bit of substance.
Yeah.
You then realise what this is all about. And the driving is the most challenging bit out of all. But the thing is, right, excuse my terminology, I use this quite a bit. All people are doing here, they are barely legal. They are barely legal. They have done the absolute minimum that they need to do in order to get that bit of plastic. I have said to you before, right, if you want to be the most professional, knowledgeable, ready to hit the ground running, dealing any situation at all, lorry driver, you come to us for 3 months and we'll teach you everything.
3 months.
And you give me £15,000 for the privilege, you're going to say to me, no, I can go to a company around the corner, like EP, that can do it for a couple of grand and get me the same thing. Yeah. So this whole process is purely the absolute minimum you need to do in order to get past. Same with the driving. You know, I mean, we typically 5 days on the rigid. We encourage people going from car to class one to do the 8 days. But, you know, you say days, that time goes very quickly. And before you know it, you're doing your driving test. And the standard for the driving test is extremely high. People think that just because they paid the money and they turn up and do the stuff that they will get that license. There's no guarantee you're going to get that license.
Yeah.
You can do your driving test 100 times. You have to satisfy the examiner. Examiners are quite fair, Will, but at the same time, they'll give you nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Once you've got through the driving bit, then we need to finish off the CPC, which is what we call Module 4.
Well, there's another CPC.
Yes. I know. So there's 4 modules. Module 1, your multi-choice hazard perception. Module 2, CPC case study. Module 3, that drive in there. And then Module 4 is a practical demonstration test, okay? So there's no driving. This is what a lorry driver does whilst working, whilst not driving. So we might ask you to do a walk-round check. We might ask you to load a vehicle. We might ask you to check for illegal immigrants and contraband. And to be fair, the CPC, really, look, for new entrants, this module 2 and 4, okay, once you finish that, you are supposed to, I think the driver CPC objective says, have the knowledge and skills to carry out the role of professional lorry driver, i.e., right, you pass the driving test and all your stuff on a Friday, you should be going out and driving commercial on a Monday, okay? But where we are now, okay, major prime obligations for drivers, not overloaded, right? No defects, driver's hours. They're the 3 basics, okay? You might do a little bit of walking around with us, checking the vehicle. We cover that, maybe a bit of defect reporting. Maybe a little bit about making sure vehicles aren't overloaded, etc. None of this process whatsoever shows you how to put a taco in. And that's one of the fundamental obligations.
Really?
Yes, nothing at all. So these poor guys, once they pass, they might have a taco. They don't even know which way it goes in, let alone select the modes.
That's
and
scary,
they are
isn't it?
Supposed to hit the ground running on a Monday.
Wow.
And that is DVSA saying that's fit for purpose. It's not.
So has it all been dumbed down too far?
Well, if you look at where we were before driver CPC, which was the same thing, medical, provisional, multi-choice hazard perception driving test, all they've added on is CPC.
Yeah.
Nothing else. So does it give new entrants required knowledge and skills? No, it doesn't. And one of the fundamental obligations is driver's hours. And when there's no legal obligation for the training companies to provide that kind of stuff, they won't do it because it will cost more money. The student doesn't want to pay more money.
Yeah.
So what they have to do now is when they pass, they have to go and look on YouTube to find out how to use them. And that's not even up to date either.
I mean, it was never perfect back in the day. I remember when I took mine, it was a flatbed. There was no load on the back.
I know. But that doesn't make hell of much difference either. With these IBCs, who come up with the IBC? They split, they break, they leak.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible idea. And don't forget, our vehicles now, we never run them unladen. They should be run unladen from time to time as well. We've got this load on the back of them all times. So,
what weight do they run at?
Well, with the Arctics, 8 tons. With the Rigid, 5 tons.
I see.
So I get that, yeah, it's not a bad idea, but again, put cost up for training companies, more wear and tear, more fuel being burnt. The fact they've done away with the manual requirement now, I mean, that's, yeah, of course, I would agree with that anyway.
Yeah.
It's only if you work in skips, tippers, quarry work, you're going to be doing manual. The driving test itself, I would say the standard is still quite high.
Yeah.
But driver's CPC hasn't gone anywhere near meeting its obligations. It hasn't. It's the whole thing is box ticking. Box ticking.
Going back briefly to the car and trailer test.
Yeah.
I mean, the other day I was overtaken by a Ford Ranger doing about 80 mile an hour in the fast lane, towing a bit of plant that didn't seem to be strapped down properly. No lights on the back, no number plate on the back. The number plate wasn't right, and the thing was swaying around. Young lad driving it. Surely there should be some sort of a test.
So when the government decided to do away with it, and again, shocking behaviour. After 1997, you wanted to tow a trailer over 750 kilos. Typically, you're going to need to do a car and trailer test. There were many, many good, reputable training companies whose only purpose was to provide car and trailer training. So the government, how's this for a sting? On a Friday afternoon, they sent a memo out saying, after consultation, we have decided that we are going to change legislation to say that you don't need to do a test anymore in order to tow a trailer over 750 kilos with a car. I had to come in the next day and I had to ring all our customers who were booked in, because we didn't do a lot, but we had 2 car and trailers running consistently, week in, week out. And I had to ring the people up and say, look, don't come in next week. They're changing the legislation. We could take that hit because we do other things. There are companies out there that just did car and trailer. And they had a great business on a Friday. Come Monday, they're out.
Yeah, that's terrible.
So the government introduced a voluntary scheme where you can do car and trailer. But it's voluntary. So voluntary, people aren't going to bother with it. Not unless they're the safety conscious ones, and normally they're the ones that won't bother doing it anyway.
No. So should there be some sort of test? It will be a shorter test
to confirm that they can reverse it, they can couple uncouple, and you don't need to go out on the road for a blooming hour to test their driving ability. They've already got a car license.
Yeah.
It should be a 45 minute test to encompass reversing, coupling, uncoupling, and 20 minutes on the road. That would suffice.
Yeah.
And we put that idea in, but DVSA just weren't interested. Because, as I said earlier, part of the problem, while they've changed up all these changes around, we couldn't get enough driving tests. Because the car and trailer tests were going out for an hour and a half, the same length as an articulated vehicle. Do me a favour, it wasn't needed. It just wasn't needed.
Yeah.
Even if you ask the examiners, they were of the same opinion.
Something else I wanted to touch on, I should have mentioned earlier, the government's boot camps. So, yeah. Could you quickly explain to the listeners what they are and tell me whether they work?
We, EP as a company, we haven't got too involved with boot camp. However, the idea was, when we came out of COVID and the driver shortage and people want to get their licence a bit short of cash, government said, right, we're going to finance for a number of individuals to get their lorry licenses free of charge. So as a result, contracts were offered to training companies. Now initially, it's very hard for someone like us to get in on boot camp because you had things like Ofsted registered and so on and so forth. So I would say that the boot camp contracts, I mean, boot camp in principle is not a bad idea. I think they offer to train maybe 3,000 people a year. So when you've got 45,000-50,000 tests going on a year, maybe 1 in 11, maybe 1 in 12 can get their course paid for. The problem was that when the contracts went out to training companies, it wasn't training companies that won the contract. It went out to like brokers, HGV middlemen, all this kind of stuff. who are just in it to exploit and make as much money as possible.
Tell me about brokers, because that's a big deal.
It's a plight on our industry. It's an embarrassment. We're both of a certain age where, I don't know, when you were looking to get your lorry licence, you certainly didn't look on the internet for a training provider.
Correct.
You might have gone in Yellow Pages or a bit of word of mouth.
Yeah.
So where we are, well, today, obviously everyone goes online and looks for it. So probably about 2008, maybe a little bit earlier, we had this phenomenon that started on the internet, whereby you have this glossy-looking website where you have these middlemen who give the impression that they're, a training and recruitment company for HGV training. So you visit their website and they've got 40, 50 centres all around the UK. They work with these companies that will pay you £50,000 a year, da-da-da-da-da-da. In reality, these are just middlemen who have no training vehicles and employ no instructors. So why are they in this business? Why are they there? To take advantage of those looking to simply improve and enhance their career by getting an HGV license. For example, if I went onto the internet and I did something like HGV training in my area, probably about 80% of the companies that would be listed on Google are not what I would call HGV training companies. However, when you look at their website, and indeed when you call their salespeople up, they give you the impression that they will sort out all your training, provide it, get you a job earning 50 grand, da 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 da. Most of the time sounds a bit too good to be true. So what's the reason the brokers are in it is to make money. And what they do is obviously they charge a margin. So for example, if you were looking to get your lorry license today, Will, and you went online and you signed up with a broker, you're going to be paying a premium for the same service that you could get with a local training company in your area. So the brokers, right, they don't have any vehicles, okay? What they do is they'll get a requirement for training, and let's say they've charged you £4,000, they'll then go to a company in your area, or maybe not in your area, and say, look, I've got a candidate, wants their training, how much are you going to charge me for that? And this company might say, well, we'll do it for £2,000. And then the broker has made £2,000 on
it. Good money, isn't it?
It's, they have, I mean, where they are now, right, it doesn't matter what I say, what I do, they are established in the training industry. They are established. The thing that really gets me, right, brokers wouldn't be in business if training companies elected not to work with them.
Mm.
We always have a choice about who we train with. The reason I can't understand why training companies, local ones, will work with these middlemen is the middlemen, first off, they won't pay you the retail price that people would pay for a HGV training course. So they'll come to you and say, I've got this candidate, we're going to put more your way. You said you're going to do it for £2,000. Do it for £1,500 and we'll send you more. So all that's happened is this middleman, this broker, has made £2,500.
Yeah.
The poor trainee, at the end of it all, doesn't realise until they turn up and see, when they do their driving course, this isn't the company I signed up with.
Yeah.
Look, the training companies, you should be taking the moral stance, right? Because all the time you're working with these middlemen or brokers, you're feeding the flames. If we stop working with brokers and middlemen, brokers and middlemen will be out of business because they haven't got anyone to work with and people will just go direct. But it doesn't matter how many times I say this, and I'm only here, I'm not here for other training companies, I'm actually here to ensure that those that are just looking to improve their life chances by getting a lorry licence aren't ripped off at the first point of call, that's all. And I think all the time that these small local training companies work with the brokers, they're doing exactly that. You know, if your business for a training company is relying purely on brokers, then you shouldn't be in business. Because the brokers are taking your margin anyway. The brokers can drop you at the drop of a hat. And it's just not right.
Yeah.
How can it be the case? Right, we're always looking for drivers. We were talking about driver shortage earlier. We're always looking for drivers. What kind of advert, Will, is it? Right, at first point, it called people going to our industry and they're ripped off and taken advantage of.
Mm.
And there's a lot of training companies out there that know exactly what is going on. It's a dirty secret. And it's wrong.
So, the last question for you. If you were in government, what one thing would you introduce to improve driving standards and, well, improve the entire situation, to be honest?
All right, well, I'm not in government for a reason. Obviously, I'm just a businessman trying to make a decent buck out there in tough times. I would scrap the law that Grant Chapps introduced. Driver CPC is not fit for purpose. It's interesting because if you go to other EU countries, like Poland, for example, I think you have to do something like 180 hours classroom training in order to get your driver CPC. We have people from other countries coming over here as driver CPC tourists to get their driver CPC license and then go back to their home country.
Is that right? I never knew that.
They do that. They come over here, it's easier. They make a declaration to say they're still living here, get their license changed for UK, do it here, go back again. So yeah, the current driver CPC, I mean, you look at all these the commercial vehicle enforcement stops that they're doing. You just look at how many infringements, right, and how many drivers get done for non-compliance. And yeah, driver CPC has been around since 2008. And if you look at the statistics, you look at things like driver infringements and penalties and so on. Driver CPC really is supposed to empower the driver to ensure that they are compliant. And if you look at all the prohibitions and non-compliances that are going on out there, you really have to question whether driver CPC is hitting its mark. And I think I think so far we were going to score rapport, I think it would be about C-, really. Don't forget, driver CPC, right, it's at the end of the day, it's not for the benefit of our training company or the benefit of the government. It's purely supposed to be for the benefit of the driver. And you're always going to get a sceptic audience out there, but we've had the opportunity for 16 years to turn the scepticism around. But people are more resistant to driver CPC than ever. I think if you put an exam in it, okay, I think you can lose 150 workforce. And I think it would be unfair to do that. Because let's face it, right, you've got drivers out there who are spot on drivers, right? And that's what they do, and they're very good at that. But you put them in a classroom and have to do a theory test, it's not their thing.
Yeah.
When I'd spoken to you before about this, the fact that they've now stopped doing the possibility of doing the same driver CPC five times
in a row, yeah,
is good. Yeah. But that wasn't the driver doing that either, that was the training companies. It's cheaper to get one course approved a year,
yeah,
as opposed to the five. So it was the training companies that were just getting one course approved five times. Poor driver turned up, goes, what are we doing today? Driver's hours. What are we doing tomorrow? Driver's hours a week.
Bloody hell.
So I think the problem is, right, when you put legislation in, which probably is a bit below standard, you're going to get companies out there that will deliver the training still below that standard. So how low are we going? The standard of driving out there, let's be honest, it's pretty abysmal. It's shocking, absolutely shocking. And I feel for a lot of lorry drivers these days because they are just doing the basic of basic license acquisition. It's just the absolute. I mean, we're looking at it now. You look at the reverse, right?
Yeah.
You look at the setup. That's all they got to do. Okay?
Yeah.
But when they pass their test, they're going to be doing a hell of a lot more than that.
Of course they are.
So what are they going to do? They're going to have to ask somebody else to reverse their vehicle up for them. So no, it's in my view, the driving test is the only thing that's probably fit for purpose. But if I was a politician, I would go, look, we got it wrong. We got it wrong, Grant Chapps. We're going to go back to how it was pre-COVID, and we're going to keep the car and trailer tests, but we're going to cut out all the faff going out on the road.
Yeah.
And I mean, even now where we are now, there's not a demand for tests anymore. You go up to the test centre and there's loads of examiners sitting around doing nothing. But what really annoys me, right, when they, after COVID, when they announced all these changes, surely somebody at some point would have gone, it's going to go quiet again, isn't it? What are we going to do then? Yeah. So we're now back to how we were pre-COVID, with having all this reversing stuff and everything else that goes with that. It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Brilliant, Sean. Enlightening that was. Thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
It's nice to vent one's one's views. Thank you, Will. Thank you.
Cheers.